The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. It's approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 26th of January, 2024. You're very welcome along to the last 9 till noon show of this week, and it's good to have you all listening. We have our Friday panel joining us, who I'll introduce to you in just a moment, but I want to invite you onto the show as well. You can text WhatsApp 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, excuse me, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. You can also watch the program if you're at home on your big screen, your smart TV, the YouTube app. Type in Highland Radio Ireland, we are there live. You can also watch us on your Fire Stick. Take us on your mobile devices with YouTube. And we're also streaming on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. Okay, let's say good morning to our guests. We'll say hello first to Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, former department school principal and community campaigner. Good morning to you, Doreen.
Good morning. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing good. Good. It's great to have you on the show. Michael White's the chair of the Green Party here in Donegal. Hi, Michael.
Morning, Greg.
Great to have you back on the show, as is Michael McLaughlin, Secretary of the Labour Party in Donegal, potential local election candidate as well. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. Morning, Doreen. Morning, Michael.
I take it, Michael, you're going for council, are you?
Was that my question?
Yes, Michael.
We'll be running some candidates, and we'll confirm next week who they are.
Okay, but you want your hat in the ring.
My hat will be in the ring, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. No, it's just to be clear, it doesn't make much difference at this stage, but no harm. Doreen, you're not going to make a late pitch for the council, are you? No?
No, I've started to work in the administration, and I'm working with conventions at the moment. We're doing very well. We're well through our candidate selection, and just two more electoral areas to work on now, Buncrana and Carndonagh. And we're delighted to see, I suppose, both young and more experienced people coming in, and it's great. We're delighted where we're at.
Good mix. Thanks. How many have you selected across the county now?
Well, we have two in the Lifford area, and we have two in Donegal. We have one in Glanties with one to be added. And Letterkenny, we have Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh with one to be added. So Buncrana and Carndonagh are next week. So, we're happy. We have five of the electoral areas covered and two more to go. And happy with the young people coming in. Happy with Aaron Sweeney being selected in Milford there. And with the likes of Jason coming forward, you know, Jason Harley down in the south of the county. So it bodes well for Fine Gael. And, I just wish the media would get a hold of that, you know, because I think they think we're doing nothing and we're not actively doing anything, but no, I'm very happy with where we're at.
What's the gender breakdown so far like?
Well, we're very short on the ground in relation to women who have actually gone forward. And we're not short in that we've spoken to a lot of women, but it's down to what's happening countrywide. I'm sure the other gentlemen involved in political parties will know as well. You know, women are still very involved with care needs and families. So whether it's young children or whether it's actually you're tied to a mortgage, you're tied to a job. So the actual full commitment to come into politics is not an easy one, you know. So,
But that means we still, and we've been talking about it for years, need a reform of how the council is operated. You know, tighter meeting times, more flexible times, you know, remote access. Looking at what sort of evening commitments are required and that type of thing. I mean, if we truly want then it to be inclusive to everyone, and there's, you know, maybe dads also who can't find the time to put their name forwards, we need to really reform how the local authority is run to facilitate people then, rather than it being a perennial problem or a perpetual problem.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But like we've seen how slow it is for national government to move on issues, you know, in relation recently to maternity leave and, you know, to items like that. So we've a long road to go yet in relation to that. There could be more flexibility maybe within the Donegal County Council, all right. But it's not easy to put your head out there either. You know, Greg, it's all very well for people to be always, you know, critical of any political party. But, you know, the people who complain and are online and are giving out are not the people who are actively involved and are not the people who are putting their heads forward. It takes a lot for any person, young or even sitting councillors, to go back in again, especially in the present climate where there's such sort of with digital media, when there's such abuse out there. So it's a difficult one. You're not exactly joining for the money. I don't think the money's great.
It's not bad. It's getting all right.
You know, well, no, they earn their money, Greg, you know.
I'm not suggesting that for a second. I mean, obviously, if it's your full-time job that you're dedicated to, but a lot of people have other interests and are also county councillors as well.
I doubt very much if any of them are full-time county councillors and just county councillors.
Well, I presume Iron Sweeney's not going to pack up teaching, is he?
No, he won't.
And exactly,
he
that's my point.
Afford,
okay.
I'm
not getting personal, but my point is it's a lot of people. It's on top of their regular income, but that's fine. I don't begrudge councillors anything. Just a quick one on that from you, Michael White. Just in terms of addressing the issues, so that the council is more representative, not just men and women, but more representative across the board. I think, as Doreen was pointing out there, it is going to continue to be difficult to attract potentially women into the council, given the current commitment that's required.
Yeah, well, I think there's a fair amount of progress overall across all, say, Green Party representatives from councillors, TDs and senators. We're at around 47% female, I think. Like, it's pretty good. But it is, as Doreen was saying, there's a number of challenges. Like, what I would say is that I know a number of councillors, in terms of whether it's attractive financially or not, a number of councillors serve one term and then don't serve again. And that's an issue. It's a challenge for people that do find their workloads too high or for other reasons. The other challenge is then around trying to attract people from non-traditional backgrounds. That's going to be an ongoing effort. You know, there's a lot of people listening to this program that wouldn't enter their head in a million years to think of themselves as giving it a shot, even though they might be great. So that's the thing, just to try and encourage people to prime themselves to start thinking about, you know, is there something I feel strongly about in my local area? Is there something I'm really worried about? Do I want to try and contribute to getting it fixed? So there's loads of work to be done, as Doreen says, but it's definitely getting better. And, you know, I'd be hopeful that in 10 to 20 years, we should be getting near parity of representation.
My word. So by the time I'm dead.
That's very pessimistic.
Well, I mean, I know, but sir, 10, 20 years. Michael, you know, I think it's good. It would be good for society if the council, and this is no offence to those that have put themselves forward, that the more representative of the society the council is, I think the better we feel it might function.
Is that for me?
Yes. Sorry, am I not saying people's names?
Well, you've got two Michaels.
Oh, I do. Right, okay. So what do you want? What's your nickname? Do you want Beardy Michael? Or? No, Michael McLaughlin. No. Michael McLaughlin. I've got a beard, so I can say that. Go on, Michael. Go ahead.
Is my beard bigger than yours?
It is. And yours is significantly bigger.
I think we have an issue generally. I mean, I find it interesting when I said that I was letting my name go forward, the number of people who've come forward and said, why the hell would you do that to yourself? Mm. And it's from a place of genuine concern, mm-hmm. that, you know, either friends or acquaintances or whatever, and people just sit at the point of, I would not get involved in politics if my life depended on it. And I was having this conversation with somebody last night, and I said, well, first of all, we're a democracy. Politics is part of being a democracy. We need to have people who are willing to go forward. So I think it's great that anybody's saying yes. I think that we need to be more representative of all shades, colours and descriptions, as you alluded to. I mean, I think, you know, we have a female leader in the Labour Party, and I think Yvonne is a really, really, if we take just on face value, she's a very clever, very well educated, very capable individual. And that's certainly something that I think we want to be seeing in politics, regardless of gender or anything else. But I think that certainly for things to be more representative, we need to change the way we look at politics, and we need to change the way we interact with politics. How we do that is a huge question. It's very easy to be very negative about politics and political parties. It's very easy to pick holes in everything and have a go at it. But I think that, you know, we need to start looking at why we vote, why there are different parties, what you want from it. And to move from there, and to encourage people to get involved with the conversation first on a level that is engaging rather than bash. Sorry, Siri has decided that he needs to get involved in my conversation, so I'm glad that somebody wants to get involved in it at any rate.
Normally it's me butting into you, but this time it's Siri. Just briefly before our first break, and then we'll get on to topics. Dory, you feel Fine Gael are being treated unfairly by the press. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think in recent times, I think they feel that we're not actively involved, and because of the nature of Joe McHugh TD moving on the issue of MiCA, that we've got a lot of criticism. But Joe McHugh still is a TD representing the area for the next year and a half, and Fine Gael is actively involved in around the country through the Women's Network, through the branches and the districts and everything else. No more than the other two gentlemen in their parties, you know. There's a lot going on that we know.
But, so do you think Fine Gael candidates will be standing and at the doorstep, sort of relying on Fine Gael's record, defending Fine Gael's record? Do you think that's what they'll be at the doorsteps through the campaign, pushing, hoping that wins votes?
Well, they will be looking at the policies of Fine Gael, and they will be taking them with them. But a lot of our people are experienced at this. But I wouldn't like people to think we haven't got good women in there. I mean, Heather Humphreys is a marvellous representation of the women within Fine Gael, as indeed is Maria Walsh, one of our European MPs, and as Mairead McGuinness, like, who's up there at the top level of European, like, we're very good women out there, but whatever's happening at county council level, we just not seem to be pulling them and inviting them on well enough. So, but yeah, of course we'll be going out. That's what every organisation would be doing, is amalgamating and looking to convince the voters, number one, to come out and vote, and number two, to get their families to come out and vote. We don't want apathy, despite the fact that it's a difficult world we live in and that there are a lot of obstacles out there, but we also need to be having that conversation if we're on the doorsteps in relation to coming out to vote for the referendum that's coming up as well on the 8th of March.
Michael White, the challenge for you is it that, you know, like, there is an element of support for the Green Party, but the way, you know, it's split up across various, you know, election areas, is it difficult to get across the line? We are in a rural area, and a lot of what the Green Party has to say, no matter how well it's articulated, feels like it is, you know, against our way of life, that we're having to do the heavy lifting. And I'm not saying that's the case, and it's not maybe the time now for us to debate that, but you know where I'm coming from. Is it more difficult to get the votes out of a specific area within a bigger area to get across the line as a Green Party councillor?
Just practically, the Green Party tends to pick up more votes in urban areas than it does in rural areas. So that's challenges. When we look at the map of Donegal, that means your biggest opportunities would be, say, Letterkenny, possibly Buncrana, any other major urban areas. That being said, like, I'm hoping that over the last 4 years, people can see some benefits of what's been done because the Green Party are in government. But we're always, it's, you know, with the best outcome in the world, our percentage will always be, we'll always form a minority party in any potential government if we get that far. So that's the reality. Everybody in the Donegal Green Party is a volunteer. We're all non-paid. We all realise the challenge of trying to promote the Green Party in Donegal, because it's a rural county, such as Leith. You know, we just have to, I strongly believe that what we're trying to do is really important. I'm strongly concerned about the impact climate change will have in Ireland and in Donegal, and that's why we're doing this. We just want to make sure anybody in Donegal has the opportunity to vote for a Green candidate if they have the same concerns that we have.
All right, well, shall see. We're with Michael McLaughlin, Secretary of the Labour Party in Donegal, Michael White, Chair of the Green Party in Donegal, Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, a retired school principal and a community campaigner. Now, Minister for Media Catherine Martin has said the current RTE board should remain in place for now to facilitate the day-to-day functioning of the organisation following yesterday's Grant Thornton report into Toy Show the Musical. A report into the musical found that the recording of the show's sponsorship money was not in line with generally accepted accounting practices. Although the report does not reveal any names, several of the board members who were interviewed admitted that more questions should have been asked about the project, with five members of that board still in place. Ms. Martin concedes that the report highlights serious failings in governance oversight, financial management and appropriate control procedures in relation to this project, €2.2 million of taxpayers' money down the drain. Michael McLaughlin, is Ms. Martin right in backing the board for now? Is that the right move?
That's an interesting one, isn't it? My knee-jerk reaction to that is no, they should all go. But then you look further into what she said, and she wants the board to stay for there to be accountability, because once you're gone, there is no accountability. So I think, you know, from that point of view, that's important. But I mean, the bigger issue here is massive. And I mean, here's another self-inflicted wound by RTE, you know, and this drip feed of problem after problem after problem with RTE is just something incredible.
I mean, but she talks about retaining them for accountability. But I mean, that's like sort of asking cows just to hang around the abattoir, isn't it? I mean, why would they?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are massive questions here. I mean, on a personal level, I have a massive question. What was RTE doing staging a musical on a stage in the first place? I've had 20 years experience on the stage. And I mean, Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage is, you know, springs to mind. The money involved in putting a musical on anywhere is phenomenal. And the decision making around that is just incredible. So we have to get some form of answers. I mean, we've seen with the earlier situation where the chair of the board had disappeared and we had no answers really at all. There needs to be some serious work done on general governance in RTE and to make sure that as a state broadcaster, we're getting value for money. But I mean, at a very basic level, somebody somewhere should have said, how is this value for money for anybody paying their license fee?
Yeah, but I still don't see how all of these people can sort of be in jobs, paid jobs, whatever, have this level of responsibility and be toying with public money here, that it doesn't really matter. See that telly behind me here that you see there? Do you know the hoops I had to jump through to get that? Unbelievable. It was like a six-month campaign of me arguing why, justifying it, pricing it. Do you know what I'm on? Like, I'm not being facetious, and we have great management here, and don't get me wrong, but this is just public money. It's being treated like it's confetti. People with responsibility on a board not simply doing their basic function, getting anonymity in a process like this, and then there's like an argument to retain them so that we can give them a slap on the wrist later once we get another two or three reports.
Well, the question is, you know, do we get rid of them, throw it all out, and learn nothing from the process?
Do we really? You know, is there lessons that we have to learn? This is the most basic, the most fundamental stuff was disregarded.
Agreed, totally. But then, how do you go from that as an experience? I'm not advocating for the board to stay in any way.
No, I get that.
I think it should be gone. But the question is, when do they go?
Okay.
You know, if you throw them out now, what do you get out of the process? Nothing at all.
I think
it's a good question. What do you get out of the process anyway?
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but there needs to be some level of accountability somewhere. And if you fire them all, then I don't think you're going to get anything.
But ultimately, what is the actual accountability? Even if they stay on the board, they can't get fined, can they? Do they get sacked? A public humiliation, a flogging? You know, like what is what is the act? There's no criminal culpability here. So what is the, why do you keep them around for accountability? Doreen, what do you think?
It beggars belief that this happened. And I can't believe that. I watched this sort of grow on RTE and saw this advertised. And there were local people in Donegal involved in this musical. And they were very talented young people. But, you know, it was a greed on the part of RTE that went down this road, because they saw the toy show as the toy story thing as something that to me they thought they could make money on. But Michael's right. What were they at, trying to do something that is way out of their realm?
I'm not sure, though, Doreen, and this is not to contradict you, I'm not sure actually they ever thought they would make money out of it. I think really what happened was is someone said, we've got the resources. I've always wanted to put on a big show. I've got this itch to scratch, and there's a bottomless pit of money there. Like, I'm not sure this was ever approached, you know, with a return for the taxpayer in mind.
Well, I don't know if it was the taxpayer, but whoever was going to get it, I just think it was awful. And the whole word governance, which you emphasised this week or last week in relation, say, to the facilities in the pastoral centre and the services being provided, the governance, I mean, if anything like that happened within a school and a board of management, there would be questions asked and there would be much more strict, laws abided by. And I'll tell you that I just feel that maybe the minister's a bit too quick to make a response, and she should have left it a day or two. I just think her response is kind of just sort of an ad hoc one, and that I'm not sure she thought well enough about this. I thought the likes of the Maya Doherty's in there and people who would be involved in production would have known better. And I'm just mesmerised. And I wonder what's next for RTE. That would be my main concern. What is next?
Well, can you imagine a scenario too where this report is put together? It's an RTE report and it's handed to the Minister of Media. And the Minister of Media does not know who the 1 to 26 individuals are. They're simply numbers. So number 3 said this, and, well, number 5 interjected and said that. So the media minister, it's actually laughable. The media minister is sitting with a report on her lap, right, and she simply does not know who the players are. And then she's going on the media, which is good, and answering questions with this cloak of anonymity thrown across the key decision makers in RTE. How is that acceptable?
Well, I'm not sure how many members are on this board. So there, for five out of that are still there, you wouldn't want to be hanging them out to dry either, because, you know, there could be legal aspects of this that we need to look at and be very careful about. But I'm just wondering what's down the line for RTE.
Well, so we have a situation here now. If there's problems in the HSC, if there's problems in RTE, if there's problems in the Department of Social Welfare, we can never, ever, ever talk about it because there could be legal ramifications. Yet nothing ever comes of those legal ramifications. It's a do you not know? Does that not frustrate you?
I do think the last hurdle we had in relation to RTE that went to, I'm not sure it should have been in the Arachnids that it was fought, and it should have been in the courts. I felt that they went down the wrong road in relation to hunting down Ryan Huberty and doing various things like that. So I'm not sure that's the road to be going. Come in to speak to TDs who may not be versed and like our minister on the whole issue. So I have huge areas of concern about the governance and about what else is going to come out about RTE. It scares the life out of me.
Well, I think also that Oireachtas committee had a role to play in on our behalf identifying some of this stuff before they did. But anyway, Michael White, what's your view?
First of all, we should have a GoFundMe the next time you need a television, Greg. That's terrible. You're reduced.
I'm just trying to use a real world example of in a private company.
I was trying to be funny there.
No, you are. Michael White, can I just say that was hilarious, but not laugh out loud hilarious. So please don't be discouraged with your wit and humour. Go ahead.
All right. Well, if you'd work with large organisations as well, you'll find out that to buy a pack of A4 paper, you'd normally have to go through some kind of process.
Yes.
Small amounts are really eyeballed, yet some idiot in senior management can go off and do some terrible, make some huge expensive mistake. So that's not unusual. The case of the RTE thing, it's bizarre from start to finish. Like, what were they thinking? As you say, did somebody even think they'd make a profit out of this? We're going to head off into musical theatre. The governance thing, I think it's really weird in the report that they didn't name the individuals. Like, governance is serious. If there are cases where people go to jail for financial irregularities, you know, with private companies, that does happen. In this case, it still doesn't seem clear enough to me that somebody's going to get rapped on the knuckles or there's going to be some kind of outcome from this that will be satisfactory for the public. It looks like it's just going to trundle on a bit. I think Minister Martin's correct that turfing out all of the board right now wouldn't work. Just from the mechanics, if you ever see how long it takes to replace a board and individuals in the screening process, I think she needs to have the people in place at the moment just to keep things ticking over. So I don't think that's a bad decision, but that is, if you've been on a board before, this is kind of shocking. It's surprising that a decision of this, you know, this amount of money could be made without, like, apparently there wasn't actually a decision made. They had some meetings taking place where three people were invited, others weren't. So the point Doreen's making, though, is that I would like to see this, I'd like to see people brought to account and get this wrapped up as soon as possible, because it's a bigger problem which relates to the point I think we're coming to later on. We rely on public broadcasters in Ireland as well as private broadcasters to provide us with information that we can trust. The longer this goes on, the greater the distrust it will show about RTE, and that's a bad thing.
Well, that's it, you see. Is that not the bigger picture? Because, you know, I understand all of your saying, and this is not a criticism of you at all, but it's the old saying, when you're explaining, you're losing. And if they want to have the public faith back, well, maybe you do have to make those tough decisions and do have to go with that nightmare process of reappointing a board. Like this week alone, nothing against the person at all, but Oliver Callanan was, it is Oliver Callanan, isn't it? He replaces, and he's a popular choice. He replaces now Ryan Tuberty in that 9 to 10 slot, but he's on 150k a year. Now, Ryan Tuberty has left RTE and he's working three times as much as Oliver Callanan, and he's on £90,000. So, you know, was Oliver Callanan offered 110,000? Was he offered 100? Was he offered 80? Was he offered 90? I mean, do you not think Michael McLaughlin, and I would hate to dig into people's private and personal lives, especially someone who I have a bit of respect for in Oliver, you know, is anything actually changing?
Well, yes, I think they've brought in the caps on salaries, which is definitely something different to what we were a year ago, in reference to specific individual salaries. I think, isn't there a clause in Callanan's contract that he can't work for anybody else? Because lots of these very high-flying presenters tend to do a number of other things as well. So Ryan Tuberty, I believe he's free to do other things with other broadcasters, should that. So I think that comes into play on that one.
Yeah, but it's not like Golden Handcuffs. He's got the radio show, which happens to be broadcast on RTE. He's got a sketch show, which just happens to be broadcast on RTE. Okay, he's not going to be able to do the, you know, €1,000 awards speech stuff, but he's well looked after within RTE. I think he'll be okay.
I'm not disputing that. I'm not saying that he isn't well paid. I think it gets into a broader question about valuing things and what the value of it should be. And we must recognise that, you know, this is someone who is well-educated, trained, experienced, has done all of those things, and whatever is a commensurate level for that, I don't know. I mean, sitting at this side of the fence, yes, it sounds like a lot of money, but it's not as much money as what used to be paid, so that's going in the right direction.
Okay, listen, thank you for that. Stay where you are. Hi, Greg. Nothing will happen, the people in RTE. If they do get cornered, they'll throw a sickie. Indicative of systemic inefficiency, nepotism, and overall waste of taxpayers' money. When the board had no accountability at all, why should the board be allowed to stay on? Should be gone, no need for them. Another, politics has failed all people of Ireland. No party can be trusted. They say one thing before an election and blatantly disregard what they stood for, with no regards for the people who voted for them, especially young people. That's why thousands are leaving every month. Another, I've only ever been at one council meeting in my life in 2019. Everyone should see how the council works or not. It was for the very successful first motion in Ireland calling upon the government to recognise and address parental alienation. 30 councillors out of 31 voted on and passed similar motions in Ireland, more in the north. It was one of the events that influenced the Department of Justice's Act. The poor county councillor is criticised on social media and powerless in the council where planning is concerned. Published the Moriarty report. Michael McLaughlin said that the leader of the Labour Party is well-versed and well-educated to have an opinion and speak out. Are they saying you need to be educated to be a good leader? Some of the best leaders have no formal education. I don't think we're referencing formal education. There's life smart, there's book smart, there's all different types of smarts, right. And I think all of us possess them in one form or other. If this is the case, it is not making it very attractive to become part of politics. You don't need to have a good education to be a good leader. But I don't think that's quite what you said.
Not at all. It was just I think that we've witnessed this globally. Women leaders come in for a very difficult time, and I think that, you know, Ivana is someone who is well prepared, who works very, very hard, who is clever and has the skills necessary to lead very well into public life. And you know, it's not about formal education at all, nor that wasn't the reference at the time.
A vote for the Green Party in Donegal is like putting €50 on a donkey in the Grand National. They've ruined the country along with Fine Gael. Michael White, I'm sure you would say it's not a donkey. It's red rum or something. You would argue you're putting money money on.
Anybody who voted for the Green Party, you can see, whether you like it or not, the impact a relatively small number of representatives in the Dáil have had. We've had a big influence on policy, and I think it's an influence for the better, and the country's going to be better for it. So we're taking steps that will help to...
I've got one for you too.
Impacts of climate change. That's been a good thing.
I get you. I've got one for you too, Doreen. Doreen will defend Fine Gael to the death. Joe McHugh left the party due to defective concrete, but still supported every no confidence vote. Only hollow words on his part.
No, sorry, I just don't agree with that. He made a stand in relation to Mike, and people know that. He's still a member of Fine Gael and a member of the Milford electoral area. And that's his choice, the route that he's going at the moment. I want to support Michael White in relation to the Green Party there. I mean, that new legislation that they announced yesterday in relation to biodiversity and all is just fantastic, and hopefully that will come to fruition. And I would put that down to the Green Party and the work that they're promoting within government. I think it's very, very good, and I would congratulate Labour or congratulate the Green Party in relation to that.
Thanks, Doreen. And things like, you know, 50% off public transport for younger people and stuff like that. So there's lots of good things, I think, but it's up to people.
Where would I get one of these buses? Not that I'm a young person, Michael. Where am I going to get one of these buses?
Get one from Greencastle to Letterkenny, for example. There's more bus routes.
What time does that leave at in the morning?
It leaves, I think, around 7:45. Well, might actually earlier than that, but anyway, it gets you to ATU on time. So
that's all right. So
very good.
The International Court of Justice in The Hague is set to give its decision today in South Africa's case against alleged genocide by Israel in Gaza, as the world watches to see whether the judges will order a ceasefire. At a two-day hearing this month, South Africa asked the court to issue provisional measures requiring Israel to immediately end its military campaign in Gaza, which began after the 7th of October attacks by Hamas, although some would say it predates that. Here in Ireland, the Social Democrats' motion calling on the government to support South Africa's case against Israel under the Genocide Convention in the International Court of Justice was defeated in Dáil. The government put forward a counter motion. It passed 71 votes to 62. And the government's motion said it would strongly consider an intervention in the South Africa versus Israel case as a matter of urgency after the court has made its orders on preliminary measures and the filling by South Africa of its presentation in the case and following the necessary legal and policy analysis. So they adopted a wait-and-see approach. They say they may well do so, but they're going to wait for the court to decide itself. I'll stay with you, Michael White, since you're up on my screen. This is a complex issue and it's an international issue. It's a global issue. But of course, we all have our own individual views on it. Do you think the government should have backed that motion? I mean, I can't see any scenario in which they would, because it just would, they want to wait and see and have their own sort of hand on their own rudder, so to speak. But what's your view on the events of the last week and the potentials today?
Well, if you want to back up at a higher level, 25,000 civilians have been killed in Gaza, so whatever he wants is for that to stop. The ICJ, the International Court of Justice case in South Africa, I think what the Green Party's view is that, yeah, we do wait and see the results in the next few days, preliminary results, and then we're recommending that we probably want to go in and back the South African case. The reason we want to back the South African case, though, is because 25,000 civilians have been killed and we want that to stop. So what everybody wants, there's quite a few things here. One is everybody wants that to stop. And how do you get Israel to stop doing what they're doing? The people that have the greatest influence on that are the states. So I think the ICJ case is important because it's trying to push that along, but that on its own won't do it. These are just questions as well. There's a risk of a much wider regional conflict. What's going on? You've got the Iranians backing Hamas there. You've got the Iranians also working closely with the Russians. You've got the Houthis who are backed by Iran now attacking traffic. There's a really strong, I'd say this is, we're at a riskier position now than we've been since the 1990s.
But in relation to that, if you look back at the language that was used in relation to Russia, that was used by the Irish government, incredibly strong. You know, it felt a little bit like our position on neutrality shifted us right before our eyes. And now it's a let's wait and see, and we'll see what the story is. And we've spoke quite strongly in the past. Is this not an issue of a scale such as you've just outlined, with the horrendous loss of life, that we have to say, you know what, and maybe we shouldn't have had to wait for people for profit to put their motion forward, be far, far more vocal in our opposition to what's going on? Because it does feel that we're trying to take a position, but also not upset Washington or Brussels.
I don't think that is what. Well, first, there's two things. The ICJ, there's an ICJ case in relation to Ukraine, and Ireland went through the same sequence. We waited for a preliminary judgment before we stepped in and backed it. So that's the timing in this case would be the same. The other thing that's different is that the Russian attack in Ukraine was entirely unprovoked. There were no Ukrainian soldiers in Russia. The Russians just came in and whacked them.
Well, I'm not going to get into the incident. No,
I'm not making the point.
But the Russians would claim, and there is documentation of this, that there was ongoing shelling of people in the Donbass region and elsewhere.
The point is making, Greg, is that most people wouldn't accept that. Most people would think the Russians acted entirely wrong. I think for the first month after October the 7th, most people were thinking that's really bad what happened in Israel, and you can understand they're going to react to something. But that quickly turned into absolute revulsion. And the other thing is, because there's a history of this where the Israelis have grossly overreacted and punished Palestinian civilians, very quickly people were saying, here we go again. And so that's...
Do you believe, just two questions... Firstly, and this is not on your party, whatever, but as an individual, and I'm not trying to paint you into a corner or anything. But firstly, do you believe that Israel is engaging in genocide?
My understanding of genocide would be that you're trying to eradicate an entire people and culture. That wouldn't be, I don't think that's what's happening, but I do think there's war crimes happening. I think that during the week they shot a man waving a white flag.
But displace them en masse, that's also a...
That's
also a criteria for genocide.
To get them out of Gaza.
So if we believe, us as individuals, that that's actually what's happening, then do we not have to call that out at our earliest opportunity?
We do, and I think we're trying to. But I mean, going back to what we're trying to get them to stop killing civilians, and just trying to figure out what's the most effective way. Is it going through the ICJ, or is there some other way to get that to stop? And then that's the question.
Okay, Michael McLaughlin, your views, please.
I think first of all, just to consider what the motion before the ICJ is, and it's not that South Africa have to prove that there is genocide happening, but there is potential for genocide. And if you are stopping water and aid and food getting into an area before you consider the bombing that's going on, then there is certainly is, you know, you're skating very close to the edge here. I agree. I think we need to be calling this out. I think we need to shift the international conversation. That's not to detract at all from the events of the 7th of October. But where we're witnessing these kind of levels of civilian death, it's just unacceptable, and we can't be saying that that's okay.
But should we not be? I just wonder, if we were an independent country, would our position be different? But then again, we'd probably be reliant on other countries again for security. It's just that I think we did have very early on the head of the EU speaking out on all of our behalf, in complete backing of what Israel were doing, even as it seemed quite clear what they were trying to achieve. We have a situation whereby the Israel leadership don't see any future for a Palestinian state. The entire population has been moved. You've talked of other things like, this will be, just if we reflect on how this might be viewed in 20, 30 or 40 years, if not sooner, right? But we can see it right now. Why are we hanging around waiting? Do you not think, Michael McLaughlin, that we should be taking an international stand here? Or am I being naive?
I'd never accuse you of being naive, Greg. I think, first of all, at the very beginning, I think President Higgins stood up and said, oh, hang on a minute, you're not talking for us here. We were very clearly calling it out at that point. I think we need to realise the size of Ireland in this context also, and the impact that we can have as a small country. We have some soft power with the US, who seem to be deaf at the moment, I think. And I think that's a big trouble. But yes, I mean, we need to look at saying what we believe in and what we think about this. And, you know, I personally wouldn't understand why we wouldn't support the South African.
But I can also see the angle from a government perspective in the procedure. So you wait 2 days after this motion, you see what the ICJ has to say, and then you adopt a position. I understand that maybe it is slightly more complex than I would like to, than I might present it. Doreen, what's your view?
I think it's a very complex issue, and I'm not sure I'm well enough read on it. Michael White and Michael McLaughlin seem to be more up to date with all that. But it's like asking me, what do I think of the situation in Northern Ireland and why there's no government? The bottom line to all this is that there is history of years and years of persecution of different, you know, and how people have been misplaced and what's going on. And then you have to look to the US and see who's running the government in the US and what's going on there, and who runs the Senate, and are there a lot of Jews in the Senate that are deciding what's going on, and what kind of... It is massive. It really is massive. And I fear for what's happening. And I really think that Micheál Martin, as Minister of Foreign Affairs, handled very well in the Dáil this week, and that they're moving at a pace that is right for this country at the moment. And
there is opportunism too on the opposite benches as well. I mean, that has to also you can propose a motion in opposition where you can put your opponents in a damned if they do and damned if they don't position as well. And I hope voters and viewers can see through that as well. That's no criticism of any individuals, but, you know, it's not always government bad, opposition good. You can see what's going on sometimes as well. And I think it's really important that the public sort of see through the rhetoric sometimes.
Yeah, I hope so. And I think as well, even some of the people who spoke in opposition to the government on the motions this week, where criticising also England and the stance taken by various political parties in England in relation to this, you know. So as a country, we're well up there, and I do think we're handling it well, and it's going at the pace that it should be going at. And like Michael White has referred to, we've been here before, and I think the steps have been taken in the right direction.
All right, back with more after these. It's our last section after the break. The group which owns the Irish Independent is seeking 50 voluntary redundancies from the newspaper. Its boss says that within 10 years, it's most likely not going to be producing a daily physical newspaper as they move to digital. The issue is, however, that people, the general population right across the world, are reluctant to pay for digital news at a level that is required to make it sustainable. So, Michael White, I'll start with you. What is the future for print journalism and its funding? Actually, before I get to that... I suppose you can't really speak about it publicly because you get the wrath of every newspaper, but do you sleep at night with all the paper that's used and all the ink and all the travelling to get newspapers around the country? I would love to know what the environmental impact is. I'm not anti-newspaper, pro-newspaper, but I just wonder, have you ever thought about it?
Environmental impact, but it's wood pulp, so it can potentially be less of an environmental impact. That is an issue, but I mean, I think it's going to be less of an issue because it is moving to digital going forward, but then that has issues as well. But the main point is we need good both national and local media, and it's at risk. I think in the UK, it's gone from being a 2.5 billion business down to a 200 million business. All that money was sucked from the newspapers over to Duke, Google and Facebook. Is that an issue? It really is. Like the fact, say, Highland and the news coverage you provide and the debates of local issues, that's super important for a bunch of reasons. One of them, from my point of view, like a democracy needs an informed population. We need to have all the people of Donegal clearly informed about issues that relate to them locally and nationally. And if you don't have good newspapers and good coverage, that's not going to happen. The second thing is that some bad actors are deliberately trying to destroy faith in journalism. Like in the States, Steve Bannon, who was in the Trump campaign, outright said that's what he's going to try and do. He's kind of trying to diminish faith in journalism so they could screw up the message. So that hasn't happened yet in Ireland. We need to make sure it doesn't. So that's a big long-winded thing about why media is important. The practical things and what the Independent's boss was saying is that the issue is the money has gone out of advertising over to the big online platforms, and how do we fix that? And I think that everybody's trying to figure that out.
Yeah, and it is actually something that no one has yet been able to figure out, which is concerning. I'll come back to you if time permits. Doreen, what's your view?
Well, I suppose I have to say what I do myself and what's important. You know, I listen to Highland. I go online to Donegal Daily every day. I like the idea, you know, of getting the national press online as well. Not sure I'm happy to be paying the money they're looking for you to join in that, you know, but I will still be buying my Tyrconnell Tribune and my Derry People to digest over the weekend, and by Saturday I'll have it totally digested, you know. So that's the kind of generation I think I'm in, and that I like the newspaper, and I do think, and there are some fantastic journalists out there, and I think it's very important, and it's a career. But the way, I suppose, our new journalists are being trained now, and it's all to do with digital and marketing, and that's very important. But sure, the world is moving so quick, God only knows. You know, it's no more than books and schools and having tablets for children. There's a whole big question out there. But, you know, at the end of the day, we want children to be reading books. We want people to be reading papers.
You see, I think it's the appetite. I find myself zoning out a little bit after the second paragraph. Now, it's more on me than others, but, you know, I don't know if I've been so conditioned that, you know, you get really the thrust of it, the colour and commentary, I kind of zone out from it, but that's just me personally. I just wonder what the appetite for some of this stuff might actually be, Michael McLaughlin.
Thanks, Rick. I just want to echo both what Doreen and Michael said there. Firstly, in terms of the importance of a reliable media and journalists are the backbone of that. The appetite, I'm the wrong person to ask about the appetite because I have a subscription to three different daily online newspapers.
Oh, we found them. We found the person.
Well, I hope that they're not just relying on me. I hope there's at least one other person. And I delighted in moving on to the...
So what do you read it on, the papers?
I read it on my iPad.
And do you read the news articles, or is it more features and columnists that you're interested in?
I read the whole thing cover to cover.
Why? Okay. Brilliant. Good That's man. The future. Mm-hmm. All right, we shall see. There's a big hoo-ha about how it's all going to be funded, and I have my own views too on the, I think the role the media has in terms of making the public feel that they are actually getting a fully balanced and open conversation. I think that's a challenge for some.
Michael, but you also have the issue, I mean, just again, to the reason it's important, things like corruption or, say, one of the biggest, in my view, one of the greatest pieces of journalism ever was the States of Fear documentaries produced, you know, where that opened up all the scandals we had about the church or politics or corruption. Right. We wouldn't have had that without good local Irish journalism, and that's important that we retain that.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, even if we look at the impact that the documentary or the docu, whatever it was, on the post office and the post office scandal in the UK that had...
But you see, I think that's actually really not a very good argument, because the media, possibly in the way it should have covered it, somewhat ignored it, and it actually took a drama...
Yeah,
to be the catalyst of change. So,
interesting to look into the formulation of that. And the lady who wrote it, it was the journalism behind it, and the journalism from the Computer Weekly or whatever it was, and something else that informed.
Okay, well, you clearly know more about this than me, so I'm terminating the conversation. I'm joking. Michael McLaughlin, I have to, because it's nearly 10. Michael McLaughlin, Secretary of the Labour Party in Donegal. Have a good day. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Michael White, as always, it took me till about 7 minutes past nine to realise there were two Michaels. My apologies, Michael. Thank you very much for joining us again. Take care of yourself. And last, certainly not least, Doreen Sheridan Kennedy. Thank you for your time and have a lovely weekend, Doreen.
Thanks very much. Just to say, it's lovely to see the Letterkenny pantomime back in the theatre in Letterkenny. Well done, Patrick Doherty. It's a credit to him.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Lovely stuff. Take care of yourself. Thank you for all of your calls and comments coming in throughout the course of this morning. We're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices. We'll come back with, of course, more guests, more content, more comments. That's all just around the corner.